Honor. Good morning. Paul Vangelo on behalf of Global Title, one of the appellants in this case. May it please the court. The principal purpose of insurance is protection, and this was stated by the court in the Transcontinental against Caliber case, and it was stated in the context of construing ambiguities in policy terms in favor of coverage and against limitation of coverage. In this case, we're addressing the issue of whether language in the exclusion, specifically unauthorized acts, were properly applied to my client in this case so as to preclude coverage under the policy. I think it's important for this panel to understand that there's no definition whatsoever of the term unauthorized act in the policy at issue in this case. Now, in contrast to that, the policy very clearly provides coverage for an escrow agent that receives money for deposit or delivery, and it covers things like wrongful acts, specifically negligence, errors and omissions, and personal injury offenses. Now, below, with respect to interpreting, our position has always been that the unauthorized act didn't even apply anyway, but the report and recommendation that was generated by the magistrate judge ended up going even beyond construing the term unauthorized act. And in essence, in our view, and with all due respect to the magistrate judge, created definitions where none existed in the insurance policy. For example, at page 14 of the report and recommendation, the magistrate judge indicated that an unauthorized act could include an intentional act as well as a negligent act. Emboldened by the creation of a doctrine with respect to what constitutes an unauthorized act by the magistrate judge, the insurance company argued in its response to the report and recommendation that unauthorized acts, the insurance company went so far to say as unauthorized acts include all acts for which actual authority is lacking. Even Judge Hudson, in his memorandum opinion at footnote 14, had a problem with it. And he posed it this way. He said, St. Paul's definition of unauthorized as elaborated upon taking from what the magistrate judge said in her report and recommendation would relieve St. Paul of the duty to defend even if the mortgage lender in this case possessed authority. I think it's important to go back to what's alleged in the complaint in this case, which is a standard negligence claim. And that is the bank has to show a duty that was breached by my client that resulted in damages to the bank. The duty, as I see it in this case and as alleged by the bank, is did Global Title, my client, owe a duty to the bank to determine whether the funds should go back to the bank or to the mortgage lender. Now, just briefly in terms of the tripartite arrangement, the bank First Tennessee was the mortgage warehouse lender for FMI, which was a mortgage lender. First Tennessee Bank would lend funds to FMI, which in turn would generate loans to close real estate transactions. Now, there's been some issue about whether or not certain extrinsic evidence should be taken into account by the court in determining whether from the four corners of the document there was some potential that a judgment against my client would be somehow covered under the policy. Setting that aside, I would ask the court to consider the following hypothetical, which is an escrow agent receives funds from the warehouse lender to close residential loan transactions that have been originated by the mortgage lender. The escrow agent receives instructions that authorize it to disperse funds not only to the warehouse lender, the bank in this situation, but also to the mortgage lender. And the importance about this hypothetical is that it happens to coincide with the facts in this case. So if you take a look at the bottom line, and I would refer the court to the insurance company, St. Paul's pleading brief at page 21, where it emphasizes that there is a duty or an instruction of Global Title to return the funds to the bank, but it doesn't emphasize the portion of the closing instruction that authorizes and directs Global Title to return the funds to the mortgage lender as distinct from the warehouse lender in certain circumstances. In our view of this, Global was authorized to send the money to either the bank or the mortgage lender, the warehouse lender or the mortgage lender. Now, what was the duty? Did Global Title owe a duty to the bank, to the mortgage lender, First Tennessee in this case, to determine whom to return the money to? Under the potentiality rule, if there's any possibility, and possibility means to me, if it goes beyond a probability or a likelihood, if there's any possibility that a judgment against the insured can be covered under the policy, then isn't it the case if the Global had a duty to determine to whom to return the funds, and if it had the authorization to return the funds not only to the warehouse lender, but also to the mortgage lender, and it breached that duty by failing to make the determination, then the issue isn't really whether it committed an unauthorized act under the policy, which is not defined, but rather they've made a case that it was a wrongful act to include a negligent act. And that's been our position all along, is that it had authorization to return the funds to either the mortgage lender in this case or the bank, warehouse lender. Now, what I don't understand quite candidly, with all due respect to the magistrate judge in the district.
Let me interrupt you a sec.
Sure.
Are you saying that the question of authorization is dependent on construction of the instructions that was given, or is it based on what generally the responsibilities are for a closing agent?
Well, I think they're somewhat independent, Judge Traxler. I think the issue is that the authorization comes out of the instructions. So if the instructions include guidance and if not direction to my client to return the funds either to the warehouse lender or to the mortgage lender, then there's no issue as to authorization whatsoever. The issue becomes if my client returned those funds to the mortgage lender and the bank alleged that it should have returned the funds to it. The issue isn't whether my client committed an unauthorized act, but rather my client was negligent when she returned the funds to the mortgage, to the warehouse lender instead of the mortgage lender.
Go ahead with your argument,
and essentially, and this is where I think and I don't understand in the analysis conducted by the magistrate judge and then by the district judge, they're going beyond construing what we've argued is an ambiguous and undefined term, which is what constitutes an unauthorized act, and in essence are creating the definitions for the insurance company that the insurance company left out by default in their policy to begin with, especially when it's compared with very clear language that negligent acts committed by escrow agents with respect to handling money are covered as a clear matter of policy coverage. I'm just about out of time, Judge. I don't think I have anything further.
Okay, thank you. You've got some time reserved. No, you don't. Mr. Wilbon does. Let's hear from him now.
Good morning, Your Honors. Clarence Wilbon from the Tennessee Bar on behalf of First Tennessee Bank. Your Honor, if I might expand just a little bit on the question that you just asked Mr. Vangelo. As I understand this, and to answer the question that you just asked him, what was the authorization, I go back to seventh grade English class and I say, what was the act here? We have to look at the act to determine if it was or was not unauthorized. Well, as alleged in First Tennessee's complaint, the act here was the transferring of funds. There's no question that Global Title was indeed authorized to transfer the funds. And that's when you then take a step back and you look at the closing instructions that come together as a part of what we in the banking industry call the loan closing package. And when you look at the loan closing package, the specific instructions in there was to you transfer the funds to one or two. You either transfer them to FMI, or you, which is the mortgage warehouse lender, or you transfer them to the warehouse lender. So you're authorized to transfer. And I submit to you, Your Honor, what happened in this case, and as pled in this case, First Tennessee is, and Global Title's position is that the negligence here, and that's why the complaint and the allegations in the and the cause of action and complaint is negligence, is that Global Title made a mistake and sent the, in doing the act that was authorized, transferring the funds, he transferred them to FMI instead of First Tennessee. And the hypothetical there, Your Honor, is this. This is much akin to what if in wire, doing a wire transfer in this instance, Global Title took the, had to wire funds to a number that was 1-800, you know, 888-2222. Well, she'd be authorized to do that, but what if she actually, instead of hitting that last two, she hit five? Was that an unauthorized act? No, it was an authorized act. You are authorized to wire the funds back to this number, but if you accidentally hit a five instead of a two, then the St. Paul's of the world get to come in and say, well, you know what? That was unauthorized because the recipient that received the funds was not the intended recipient. Unauthorized, we don't pay. If we allow that to continue to go on, that's what the insurers like Global Title will never, ever have coverage, and the St. Paul's of the world will continue to have the opportunity to pocket premiums. You can't make a mistake. You've got to be perfect. Well, what are you insuring against? If you're going to be perfect, there's no reason to have insurance.
Well, didn't the complaint in this case actually direct, or at least it's alleged, that Global Title had a duty to hold the funds in trust and then distribute the funds as directed upon closing? That's the allegation in the complaint that the magistrate relied on. And Global Title never got those directions. So isn't that an unauthorized act if they acted without specific direction?
Global Title did receive the directions, Your Honor, that in that the supplemental closing instructions were provided to Global Title, and the supplemental closing instructions authorized Global Title to transfer the funds if they were a wire to First Tennessee and if it was a check to FMI. And Global Title simply made a mistake and submitted the funds, a wire, to FMI instead of a check, and having not received the check. So that's where I think the disconnect here with what the district court did, Your Honor, is that the district court took it upon itself to add facts or to insert some interpretation that's not in the complaint. Again, the complaint states, instead of returning the advance funds to First Tennessee upon finding out that the loans were not going to close, Global Title transferred the funds to Financial Mortgage. Well, to state the again, there is, that's all the complaint says, coupled with what you just said, Judge Diaz, is that that's where we are. How we got to the point where the district court started adding interpretations of unauthorized, what is unauthorized. Well, I think you put the cart before the horse when you take the case out of the litigant's hands and say, we're going to add, you know, meaning to these ambiguous terms, or we're going to determine whether or not this was authorized without looking at the actual, what I'll say, the verb here is, what was the action that was taken, and were you authorized to take this action? Yes, the verb, that was followed to a T. And finally, Your Honor, as I'm getting down to my last minute, I'll state that, as I touched on just briefly, if we allow these interpretations to continue to go on, what's the expectation of the insurer? What, in this case, what's the purpose in having a escrow agent that handles money have a insurance policy where they pay premiums, but you can't make an error or omission? But because in this instance, St. Paul states in its brief that, well, Global Title is insured against errors and omissions, as long as they don't involve the handling of funds, because they exclude everything that involves the handling of funds in terms of negligence. And indeed, Your Honor, if you look at it from an intentional standpoint, well, how can you intentionally, if you're authorized to do something, if you do something other than that, then that was intentional, if you're saying that negligence can never be covered in this instance. So, well,
it seems to me what you're saying is, if we accept that definition, then the insurance comes telling you, you're insured unless you do something intentionally wrong or if you make a mistake. But other than that, you're covered. Which is really no coverage at all.
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
I think I understand your position. Did you have any questions?
I have 20 seconds, Jeff, and if y'all have any questions, thank you.
Okay. All right, Mr. Bannon.
morning, Chief Judge Traxler and Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Chris Bannon. I'm from Chicago, Illinois, and I represent the Appalachian St. Paul Fire and Marine Insurance Company that I'll refer to as St. Paul. The District Court correctly determined that St. Paul had no duty to defend or indemnify Global Title against an underlying liability case filed by First Tennessee. In so doing, both Magistrate Judge Locke and District Court Judge Hudson determined that a clear and unambiguous exclusion of the St. Paul policy applied to very straightforward allegations of an underlying complaint. The court found that there was an alleged loss. First Tennessee lost its money, it was damaged, that resulted from an unauthorized act, the transfer of First Tennessee's funds to someone other than First Tennessee, FMI, that deprived its owner, First Tennessee, of its use. It's basically a one-sentence exclusion. The court found it very clear and unambiguous and applied it to this case. The allegations of the complaint, as Judge Diaz correctly stated, indicated that Global Title held the duty, was alleged to hold a duty, to hold these funds until the closing took place, and if it didn't, to transfer or return the funds as directed. And I guess that's where the facts get a little different in the oral argument here than they did actually in the underlying case and in the complaint, because Mr. Vangelo's description of the directions that were provided to Global Title are different than what the record actually reflects. The court found, the district court found, that the extrinsic evidence that Global and First Tennessee wanted to rely on in the underlying case should not be considered because the court applied the eight corners rule that Virginia courts and this court have recognized in insurance coverage cases. However, the court also said even if the court were to consider other evidence, and specifically the supplemental closing instructions that Mr. Vangelo now wants the court to look at, the result would not be any different. And I'd like to read to you what those supplemental closing instructions were. They were attached to the complaint that First Tennessee filed. They said, the instructions provided, First Tennessee Bank is the warehouse lender for this transaction. The bank will have a first priority security interest in the mortgage. Now here's the important part. If the mortgage loan does not close, you, Global Title, are to either one, return the unused cashier's check to Financial Mortgage Inc., or two, return the funds via wire transfer directly to the bank. The only asset involved here were funds. There was no cashier's check. Global Title had no instructions whatsoever to return funds to FMI. The only instructions were to return funds to First Tennessee Bank. Global disregarded those instructions. And again, as Judge Diaz said, if Global was to hold funds and return them as directed, Global had the directions. The act in returning those funds to FMI rather than the bank was in disregard of the instructions.
Let me ask you,
unauthorized act.
In the amended, the amended intervening complaint, didn't the allegation of negligence, wasn't it based on a violation of a code, responsibility imposed by code as opposed to responsibility imposed by the instructions?
The instructions were attached to the complaint.
Right, but I'm looking at the allegations of the complaint.
I understand, Your Honor. And that may be why the district court didn't feel it necessary to refer to the instructions themselves. But in any event, Global Title's duty was to return the funds to their true
that's
owner.
That's not the basis. That is not the duty that the complaint asserts was violated. the duty that the complaint asserts was violated was the duty established by Virginia Code 6.1-223A.
Which is essentially to hold funds for the rightful owner.
Right.
And not to transfer them to somebody else.
Right.
And that's what happened here.
Right, but not but the duty alleged to have been violated is not for not following the instructions, is for not complying with the responsibilities imposed by statute.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
The duty was, the breach of the duty was transferring the funds not to the rightful owner, but to someone that they didn't belong to.
Right.
And getting back to the argument that has been raised in terms of the act, and we've seen that argument throughout the case, what is the unauthorized act here?
Well, not only that, but I guess the principal argument is that unauthorized is undefined, and to the extent that it's undefined, it should be construed in favor of coverage as opposed to against coverage. How do you respond to that?
In two ways, Judge Diaz. One is that Magistrate Judge Locke and Judge Hudson correctly, in our view, did what Virginia courts and this court have done many times, where there is an undefined term in the policy. Policy cannot define every single term in the English language that's used, but in those situations where a term is undefined, the court looks to a dictionary definition of the term. And the court cited the Black's Law Dictionary of Authority and unauthorized. The definition of unauthorized is done without authority or made without actual implied or apparent authority.
That's very helpful.
And the court then said, okay, well, what does authority mean? And the authority is defined as the right or permission to act legally on another's behalf. And the court determined Global had no right to act in transferring the funds to FMI.
Well, you're drilling that down very specifically. Global obviously had a right to act in this case at some point, in one way or another.
Certainly.
But the argument is that they made a mistake.
Yes, that is correct.
And
but that is the last act that resulted in the loss, the act of transferring the funds to FMI. They were authorized to perform many acts. They were authorized to receive the funds. They were authorized to hold the funds. But those were not the acts that resulted in the loss.
And the hypothetical of the misplaced digit on the phone wire transaction, same result?
It would be the same result at the point where the employee of the title company makes that mistake and directs those funds to somebody other than their rightful owner. And that is certainly a result that Global Title doesn't like, but it is also not something that's unique. We cited a lot of cases from across the country from the past 30 years that have applied these types of exclusions in these types of policies.
Well, it's not that they only don't like it, but they say, what's the point of having insurance if the very essence of the transaction that was intended to be insured against is out the window?
Because the essence of the policy is not solely for one transaction. The policy was sold to Global Title and sold any title company to insure them against a variety of risks, not just escrow for money, but as is clear from the definition of professional services, they are insured as a title agent, as a title searcher, as an abstractor, as a closing agent, and as an escrow agent. Those services entail functions such as searching title to property, preparing documents, obtaining proper signature, obtaining proper notarization, making sure the documents are recorded in the proper place and in the proper form. And mistakes happen in all those situations. And Global Title and other title insurers are insured for those situations. Additionally, even as an escrow agent, the definition of escrow agent makes clear that an escrow agent not only handles funds, but also handles the escrow of property, deeds, and bonds. And there can be mistakes that happen in those functions as well, which are covered because they don't involve an act which causes the loss of someone's funds. So there are a variety, and as the district court found, a variety of services, a variety of acts that are covered under this policy that have nothing to do with the handling of funds. And additionally, an escrow agent, even in the handling of funds, is covered for other acts. The personal injuries that are covered under the policy, libel, slander, defamation, and other personal injuries can occur even while the escrow agent is handling funds. So the, quote, illusory coverage argument that Global and First Tennessee have raised simply is not the case here. This is not the transcontinental case where a policy was sold that solely covered the insured for its sprinkler business in maintaining and installing sprinklers, and yet the exclusion that the insurer attempted to apply entirely took away all of the coverage that that insured could ever want or seek for any act that that insured could engage in. That's not the case here. There is a broad range of coverage provided for a full-service title agent like Global Title in all the services that it provides, including as an escrow agent. So we believe that the district court correctly addressed that very issue and found that this was not illusory coverage. There was a variety of coverage that was available. The Global and First Tennessee have also attempted to create an authority argument that's based on Virginia law that has to do with vicarious liability or respondeat superior liability. They've cited cases that talk about the apparent authority that an agent has in the context of performing a service. Those cases have nothing to do with this case because they focus on the master's liability for the servant's act, not whether the servant actually had authority to perform the act. In those cases, the act involved was still unauthorized, but the master was liable for them because the servant was performing a service that was authorized. Again, that is not the case here. We're dealing with whether the ultimate act that led to the loss here was authorized or unauthorized. And Global Title and First Tennessee will never stand up here before the court and say that the act of transferring funds to FMI was authorized by First Tennessee. If First Tennessee said that, it would lose its case, its underlying case. Global Title could not be liable if that act of transferring the funds to FMI were authorized. They would say, we were supposed to do it. We were authorized to do it. First Tennessee loses its case. So Global Title's liability in an underlying case simply cannot occur if the court finds that that act of transferring funds to FMI was authorized. So the court, as the district court did, should focus on what that last act was that led to the loss. And finally, Your Honors, I'm going to leave some time here, and certainly if you have questions, I'd like to answer them, but I'd like to address the potentiality rule that Global's counsel addressed. The potentiality rule that the Virginia courts apply does not allow an insured to basically, as the district court said, conjure up any set of facts that might give rise to coverage. What it does is force the court and the insurer to look at the facts that are alleged in the complaint. And if those facts in the complaint could potentially give rise to coverage, then there's a duty to defend. The district court correctly found that the facts alleged in this complaint do not give rise to that potentiality. They clearly show that this was a situation in which Global Title had authority to hold funds but did not have authority to transfer those funds to FMI. And when it did so, it committed an unauthorized act that deprived First Tennessee of the use of its funds. So the court correctly determined that St. Paul had no duty to defend or indemnify Global Title, and consequently found that St. Paul had not breached any contract or any obligation of good faith in its disclaimer of coverage for the underlying case. And with that, again, I have time to spare, but if your honors have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
We got it.
Thank you.
Mr. Wilbin.
Your honors, based on what Mr. Bannon just stated, that First Tennessee or Global would ever stand here and say that the act of transferring the funds was not authorized, I submit to you, Your Honor, the transfer was authorized. Global couldn't hold those funds forever. At some point, those funds had to be transferred. Transferring them to the wrong person was negligent. That's what this case is about. Transferring the funds was authorized. Transferring them to the wrong person, again, was negligent. And, Your Honor, I submit to you that when I came up here earlier, I stated that about the there being no coverage of the illusory coverage issue. Based on the record in this case and Mr. Bannon's argument as well, here's what we have. St. Paul issued a policy that provides coverage in three instances, basically in three instances. One, as long as you're perfect. Two, if you don't need insurance. And three, if an escrow agent that's going to hold banks' money goes out and hits somebody in their car or knock them down or injures them personally. But if you handle the money or you go so far as to you're wiring the money back to the bank that wired it to you and you hit a 5 instead of a 2, you don't have coverage. St. Paul just admitted that under no circumstances you can't make a mistake whatsoever. You better hit a 2, because if it's an accident, we don't have to pay. So, again, if the decision of the district court is allowed to stand, that's bad precedence. It emboldens and empowers the St. Pauls of the world to, one, never, ever will St. Paul put a definition of unauthorized in there. Because I tell you what, if you ask Global Title or any Global Title of the world, what does Black's Law Dictionary say unauthorized means as set forth in St. Paul's insurance policy? No Global Title could answer that question. And that's the whole design here. Let's leave it subject to St. Paul's interpretation, and on the day that you're not perfect or the day that you need insurance, you won't have it. There won't be coverage. And again, Your Honor, I thank you all for the time. Unless you have any questions, I'll take a seat.
Thank you. We'll come down and greet counsel and then go into our last case.